So I took my son to a baseball game a year ago. I think it was a year ago, maybe two, but I think it was one, last baseball season. And we got there really early. It's part of our process. We get there so that we can park the car and not have to rush and, get some street meat or whatever and hang out. And as we're sitting there waiting, oh, and it was a special game. Like he was going to be able to get inside the stadium early for a special thing as part of being part of the Jays Club. So we get there and we're sitting there and we're just talking and just hanging out, father and son. And he looks over and he says, "Dad, that's one of the players walking to the stadium." And I said, "Oh yeah, it is." And it was one of the young Blue Jays up and comer. Bo Bichette is his name, and Bo's a young baseball player and he's fairly good. So we suspect he's going to be a star in the major leagues. And William spots him and he's like, "Can I go and say hello?" I said, "Well, just hold on a minute. Just hold on a minute. Let's see what's going on." And as he's walking towards the entrance to the stadium for the players or for personnel, there was a whole whack of people that just appeared out of nowhere behind him. And they were walking up, like they were behind him, and then some were running up in front of him and holding out like baseball cards saying, "Can you please sign these? Can you please sign these?" And he had headphones on, so he was listening to something and he just kept walking. He didn't stop. He didn't acknowledge anybody. He had a backpack on. He had his headphones on. He's just walking. And people, now more people are surrounding him. Had he stopped and acknowledged somebody, I would have said, "Go ahead and I'll take a picture of you saying hello." Like my son didn't even want anything. He just wanted to say, "Hey." And I would have been like, "Awesome. I'll snap a picture of you saying hello to him." And it's a memory. But the guy didn't stop. And as he kept walking, he finally got to the security barrier where they let him in and everybody kind of just stopped and then turned around, walked away. And my son said to me, my son was devastated in a way. He's like, "Dad, he didn't stop and talk to anybody. He didn't sign a card. He didn't say hello. He just kept walking. Almost like nobody was around him." And I said to my son, "Well, I guess like he's in zoned in or just not interested in talking to anybody right now." And this is a great example to what nobody who's listening to us right now is going to understand, because you and I were talking about this on the on-ramp, about this hero worship of people who can do certain things that other people can't and are put on a pedestal for it or are highly paid for it. And that was a good example of I literally sat on the bench, because if my son ran up to him, I would have been close enough to still supervise my son and not have to chase him around and worry that he was going to get lost or somebody was going to do something to him or whatever. That's how close we were to this guy. And this guy paid no mind to anybody around him. And so I come back to two things. Number one, my son and the way he viewed this person based on what he can do on the baseball field. And number two, this person not being able to live his life in a normal way. Because literally, the minute he walked out of his condo and got onto the street in Toronto, he was surrounded by people until he got to the stadium where he entered and then got some peace because he was in a building where nobody could get to him. So there are two perspectives here. And is now my son doesn't see him the same way. My son, when this guy's name comes up, my son's like, "Yeah, whatever. He's not really a nice guy." And I'm like, "But you don't know what he's really like." And my son's like, "But he didn't stop and talk to anybody." I said, "Well, there could be many reasons for that. We don't know what they are. And I guess you can choose not to like him anymore as a baseball player. That's your call, not mine. But how would you feel if every time you walked outside, you were surrounded by people that just wouldn't, like you felt like you were never being left alone?" And my son's at the age now where he can consider that. He's like, "Yeah, I guess like you have a point. What would it be like to just walk around and never be able to be alone?" So Like I said to you, the whole thing for me boils down to this. I'm going to meet people along the way in my lifetime. I'm going to see people on the internet with an interesting message or an interesting story. And so what I do now as a middle-aged dude is I take what I can from those people and those experiences that I think I can use in my life to do something better or to be better or actually examples of what not to do so that I don't get myself in situations that are ones that I don't want to be in.
The cautionary tale.
Cautionary. What you can look at it any way you want. Like I told you, I've discovered so many different people from YouTube. I don't worship any of them. But I do find certain messages more interesting to my life story based on connections I can make of who I am and how I grew up and what I'm about. But that doesn't, I don't connect, I don't look up to the person. I connect with the stories and the lessons, and I take something away, and I may go back to those channels or those people to hear more because I'm interested and I want to gain more because I like what they're putting down. But at the end of the day, for me, they're as human as I am. And they've made mistakes and they've had glorious moments just like I have, just like we all have. And I do, you know, when we talk about hero, there is one person that I can think of at the moment that I would call a hero for me, and that's my dad. And there's many reasons for that. And my dad was no angel. My dad did a lot of things to me that, you know, people would say he's a horrible man for doing those things, but everybody's got dark and light in them. And I choose to focus on how he lived the majority of his life to do the best he could to raise me and my brother and my sister and to take care of us. And it's by no means was it perfect, by no means. You know, but I can't fault the guy. Like, I knew him personally, so it's not like he was some dude I saw on YouTube with a story. I knew him personally, and I when I need to grind things out, I think of my dad because that's all he did. He was just a grinder all the time. Now, I don't want to live like that, like he lived, but I sure have a lot of respect for how he continued to do that until the day he died. But aside from that, like, the word hero for me is comical. Like it's comical. It's cartoonish. It's about movies and books and stuff. Like that's, I don't know. That's what it is for me. So it's different for my kids because they're growing up and they see the world differently. They don't get a whole perspective of a person. Right? Like they see me, and it's funny because I live with them and nag them every day about like cleaning up after themselves in the bathroom or the kitchen or doing their homework or whatever. I'm a pain in the rear end. But I wonder if they ever think about, hey, my dad wakes up every morning, goes to a job so he can make money, so he can do things. And lately I've not been liking my job, and my youngest is fully aware of that. And he was actually concerned the other day with, Dad, are you going to keep your job or are you going to find another one? And if you're going to find another one, that's kind of scary because it may change the way we live. Like my kid's saying that to me. And now I'm trying to explain that, hey, you have good days at work. You have bad days at work. There are lots of factors that come into play if you decide to leave a job or keep a job. Like it's not, you don't just, for me at least, I don't just wake up and decide I'm done. There's a lot that has to go into it, but it's interesting, right? Like, do they see that side of me? Do they see my dad like can grind it out? My dad has a work ethic. My dad's also a pain in the butt, like on many things, but are they only focused on one thing because of the way it impacts their life? I don't know. I'm now at my age and my experience, I'm now looking at a variety of things about a variety of situations. So when, you know, I see someone like social media is perfect for this, right? Because you rarely get to see the whole person. You only see mostly highlights. some lowlights. And even then, I question their integrity, depending on what they're saying and what their brand is. Like, it just keeps getting complicated, right? There's more layers than meets the eye. But anyway, so that's the hero thing. I just wanted to throw that out there. I don't know how you want to round that out, but
I got tons. I love the accountability. When you say that, you know, looking at your dad as a hero and you include the light and the dark, I think that is something that's really important to me in the discussion around, heroes and individuals that we look to for, direction or confidence or exemplar for their behavior. I think it's also because part of it is to sort of strip the individual of the elements that allow them to access that part of themselves is cruel. And again, it's the single lens. Other people have done a far better job than me talking about the problem with using a single lens to get to know someone. And that accountability about, it's accountability and utility, as in, what do you do when your hero doesn't behave in the way that you want them to? Your story of your son is an existential crisis on one level, because there's this individual that just is not doing the thing that heroes do. And because heroes, you know, do the thing where they hit the ball over the backfield wall, or they throw the ball really, really fast. And also there's an expectation of access to your heroes, especially when you see them walking down the street. Like, that closes the loop. There's that person that I feel like I have such a deep connection to, that I actually have some ownership over them, or I have ownership over their day, or ownership over their behavior. I would say that's a really big example of seeing an alignment between your own values and what you think are the values of that individual. And that's where you start to get into interesting spaces. 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old, you're supporting your child. But when you, I think, or when I get into these conversations with adults about who they represent as heroes, I always like to spend a little bit more time in the accountability and how you're building accountability for that individual to have behaviors that maybe they're just expectations of yourself, as in, you think you should be able to operate that way, or you are operating that way, and you see that in the person. I mentioned I don't have a list of people that I've, or even a rotating list, or I can't go back to a time, I guess I'd have to ask my mom, but I can't go back to a time where I thought to myself, man, like, I just wanted to be that person. Like, that's really, like, I wanted to have everything. I want to be that person. I want to sort of live their life. So now when I think about individuals, I'm cautious about how I even admire people, because I kind of start with, I'll admire attributes. So a little bit like what you're talking about Goggins, and mentioning, you know, he on many times has said, like, don't use me as kind of like your, just be aware, I'm as much of a checklist for people to improve their life as I am a cautionary tale. And I like to sort of stay in that space and getting to know people, because it is difficult, but it's wholesome. That's the whole person that's in front of you. And I'm not saying you, you don't have a right to access to anything about them that they're not willing to share, which just, this is kind of like the last part to this, is that, you know, there are people that only share their bad behavior, and they have qualities that they will never share with you, or they may never share in public, in the same way there are people that only share their good qualities. When you start to notice these things, and social media is an example that kind of lights up, it kind of lights up everything the exact same way, like the exact same brightness and retweet and re-upping is used for the good stuff and the bad stuff. I would still say it's a lot of fiction unless you can start to build an authentic relationship with the person. if I use yours and my relationship as a 4 or 5 years later, the reasons that we know more about each other is because we've intentionally revealed the light and the dark. We may have noticed stuff too, both of us, of each other, but you never know if that's real until the person confirms it. You just don't. You can't assume intention unless you have a conversation around it. You can assume impact. You feel good, you feel bad, but you can't assume intention. So, you know, when we find out that we notice that a hero, someone that would say as a hero, well, let's say it. So use Bob Yor as an example right now. Bob Yor has taken some heat because he's come out as a supporter of Trump. I don't know. My first question is, you know, is there other people in his world that he trusts far more than social media that have known that for a decade? They know that about Bobby because they're good friends with Bobby. Like, yeah, Bobby's always supported, you know, Republican agendas and always supported highly, you know, super conservative and has always really loved, you know, some of the things that Trump has come to represent. So for the rest of us that are just noticing it now and sort of saying, well, you know, I have to kind of get rid of, I have to cancel Bobby as one of my heroes. On one hand, I go, that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate because, you know, it's unfortunate on a lot of fronts. One, that there isn't the opportunity to talk to, like, if Bobby's your hero, that you don't have an opportunity to talk to Bobby to kind of say, okay, I think I need to get to know you a little bit more just so I don't have to throw out all of your amazing contributions to hockey at the same time that I feel like I have to throw you out because you're connected with Trump. And I think it's unfortunate for anyone that jumps on the bandwagon, if that's a new thing. They're like, oh, I like him more now. Or the other individuals that just kind of stick on and say they like him less. Back to you and I, we made an intention. I felt we both had intention to get to know each other and to become friends. We've had many conversations about how, you know, the steps that are necessary to take in order to go from what would be, let's say, what potentially could be a surface digital relationship, of which I have them on social. I have individuals that it's just every once in a while, a hey, a hello. And then there's other individuals that there's more intention there, whether to meet for a meal or phone them directly. But I feel like the what comes with the making the direct phone call and spending time with is the whole person. And if you're making that decision, you're making the decision to have a richer relationship. Will you always like the stuff that comes out of it? That's an impossibility. Do you feel closer and more connected? Likely. And those are the bonds that bind. I like those bonds. I like having that connection. I appreciate that connection that I've developed with you. In an alternate universe, you and I were just podcasters that kept on putting, you know, content out into the edgy world. But there was choice there to sort of become more connected. This is a good Halloween episode.
I'm glad that you dropped the Halloween, because I was just about to wish you a happy Halloween and everybody else listening. And as if you're watching, I've got two things here. I've got my Hulk fist, because, you know, it's Halloween, gotta have the Hulk fist. And I've got my hockey helmet, because I could dress up like a hockey player. And I thought about wearing the hockey helmet for podcast, but the helmet won't go over my headphones, and my headphones won't go over the helmet. So I'm just going to have them sitting here. And, you know, funny that we're talking about heroes, because Hulk is a superhero, according to pop culture, I guess you could say.
Should I go get my costume? I just have it on a table beside me. Should I go get it?
Yeah, you can grab it if you want.
Give me one sec.
Yeah, no problem. While he goes to get his costume, I can say that I really don't like Clough. He thinks I do because I spend a little bit of time with him every Saturday morning, but I really don't like him. I bet his family doesn't like him either, but I don't really know for sure. I've never spoken to his wife or kids about that. Ah, he's back.
I don't know if you can hear me, but let's see if I can put this on properly, okay?
Okay.
I'll see if I can hear it. With the headphones. I can
hear you.
With the headphones. I'm going to.
So Chris is now, oh, the camera's off so he can put his costume on. It's got to be something whacked out. Clough's like that. He's different. Different's okay, though. There's nothing wrong with different. Oh, it's the shark head. And now he's trying to put, oh no. The front cord is looking really, okay. Can you hear me, Clough?
I can.
And I can, and I, and I can hear you too.
Can you see in the mouth?
Yes. Is that your face?
That's my face. That's how you see. So I'll wear this just for the next little bit. It's kind of constricting.
Okay, well, I'm putting on the glove then. So here's, I got the Hulk glove on, the Hulk fist, and you've got the the shark. This has got to be the worst episode ever.
And No. I think we unmasked first. We showed our alter ego first.
Okay, now I can see more of your face. I've gotten, I can totally see your face now. I couldn't see it before. That's weird. But poor Shref, he's going to be listening to this in about 6 weeks, and he's going to be like, what were those guys doing? Okay, so can we continue?
Yeah, drop.
Okay. I got to say, it happened again. Clough, it happened again.
What did?
I'm glad you asked that question.
All right, thanks for that. That was an excellent setup. That was an excellent setup.
This is what happened, Clough. Yesterday, I was asked by another individual if they could have my cell phone number.
Oh. Wow.
And I said no with a big punch to the no. I didn't really punch, but it's kind of like you say no. And you get that effect. Yep. Oh, and for anybody who's not watching, what I'm doing is every time I say no, I'm taking the Hulk fist and bringing it right up to the camera, yep. Right in your face.
Punching the shark.
Boom. With my Hulk fist. You don't stand a chance, shark head. Okay, you want to hear this story?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, before I jump into this story, I have to tell you, though, that I met up with Carlos at lunchtime during this week, and we did like a mini PD session. Me, Carlos, and my buddy at work, Mike, we talked report cards for 30 minutes. I think it was Thursday lunch. It was awesome. It was good to hear Carlos. So Carlos, if you're listening, it was great to have PD with you in the middle of the day. I love it. Okay, let's move on. So yesterday, we were celebrating Halloween at school, and I wore a hamburger outfit, just one of those things that you slide over your head. And
I saw that. I saw okay. You post up on socials, yeah.
So it's a hamburger. And the grade 4 or 5 teacher at the end of the hallway, she said to me halfway through the day, she's like, I love the hamburger outfit. There's a kid in my class that's wearing a pizza outfit, and then there's a kid down the hall who's wearing a taco outfit. These two kids happen to be brothers, and she said, I would love a picture of the three of you together because it was the same type of costume, just a different food item. So I'm like, yeah, let's do that. That's awesome. So we're getting closer to the end of the day, and I'm not wearing my thing anymore. So she sees me, and she's like, hey, what happened to your costume? I'm like, I just threw it over my head. I took it off my head. She's like, okay, can we do the picture now? I said, yeah, sure. So she gets the student in her classroom, gets the student in the other classroom, and then they come to me, and we get a picture taken. Great picture. So, you know, the kids go, and I'm like, hey, by the way, if you get a chance, can you send me the picture? Because I'd love to tweet it out. Like, it's a great picture. And she's like, yeah, no problem. So, she walks away, and then she comes back into my room. She's like, and she's holding her phone, and she's looking down at her phone, and she goes, I don't have your text. And
there it is.
And it was a moment for me. It was one of these for me. No, came right to my face. And I was like, it was time stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Everything stopped. And I stood there and I thought, uh-oh. Okay, here we go. It was one of those weird moments where, like, you know that the person's not being difficult. they just want to, she just wants to send me the picture. But if I give her my text number, then she's got my number.
Yep.
And I don't give out my number to anybody. And she's my colleague, and I, maybe one day I'll call her a friend, but she's, I, we're not really, like, we're not friends. Like, you and I are friends. So anyway, I said, oh, you know, you can email it to me. And then there was a moment where I could tell that it was an uncomfortable moment for her, in my opinion. But hey, it was for me too, because here you got this, this middle-aged dude who's like, nah, you're not going to text me. You can just email it to me. And there was a moment where she was like, oh, probably because at her age and the people she's chilling with, it's no biggie. Everybody's just giving everybody's cell number out, right?
Yep.
That's what I'm assuming. So she said, okay. And I'm like, okay, thank you. And then as she turned around, she started walking out the door. I tried to lighten the moment by saying, you know, I was born in the 70s, right? Meaning to say, I'm an old dude. And I'm an old dude, send it through email. She's like, okay, no problem. So it happened again. And it was a very innocent, like, there's nothing to it. But it was a moment, it could have been a moment of weakness for me to be like, oh, it's just a Halloween picture. And then who knows what happens? Maybe next week I get a text saying, hey, I have a problem with my math. Can you help? Or 2 months from now, somebody messages me and says, Roland, I need your help with this. Where'd you get my number? So-and-so gave it to me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying any of those things are going to happen. I'm saying they could happen, and I'm not interested in those things happening. Happy Halloween. So there's my spooky story that I almost gave out my number, and I didn't want to give out my number. No.
I might have to take this off. It's a little warm in here.
Take it off, dude.
Take it off. Hey, it's the masked teacher. Take it off.
That's a cool outfit.
Who could it be? Who could it be? Oh, it won't go off.
I think it's Derek. Oh, it's
Clough. Yay.
It's Chris Clough.
It's Chris Clough, the masked teacher. I bought this a couple of years back. I should have bought more. It was at Walmart, and they had like three or four of them. There was like a shark head, like a teddy bear head, and they were just called mascot masks. But I thought, like, it's kind of cool, eh? It's always been kind of squished. The kids always use it for dress up.
Of course they do.
Yeah. And it's super plush. Like, it just feels like something you'd win at Wonderland or something, you know? Throwing the nickel on the plate, actually probably the toonie, to be honest. I feel like I don't want to let go of this hero worship thing. There's so many layers to it, but I think we have to, I want to almost just kind of, I guess, park it for other people to chew on for a bit. For me, the one thing where the last connection I'll put in there is also, it's a little bit of that. We're not really, I don't think we're in this muck anymore, but the whole chatter about edu-celebs. And I think there's similar, you know, if the same scrutiny were used for, let's say, how, you know, we talk about past prime ministers and wanting to take down their statues and how actively people take down the statues. If we had that same kind of mindset applied to edu-celebs, that would be an interesting conversation. I think part of the bread and butter, let's say, of edu-celebs is that they offer digital resources, right? Or in-person resources. And I think in a lot of ways, when we talk about heroes, and you see there's a hashtag out there, you know, hashtag edu-hero. We have access to these individuals still. This is the kind of the dividing line. We have access to these individuals that we may have a disagreement with as far as their style or the things that they espouse about education. I think the conversation would be so much more interesting if, instead of being willing to pay money to bring in someone that skateboards or someone that dresses as a pirate, to be able to have them at a round table with people that are educators, like in a more sort of personalized thing, and talk more about how, what's their relevancy and current application, and how individuals are kind of pushing back and saying, you know, we're not really down with your product anymore. The whole iconoclasm of pulling down a statue, I don't know if that'll ever happen with anyone that's, you know, has some celebrity amongst educators. I think they'll just kind of disappear. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll stop posting. I don't think they're going to, I think there's a very few educators right now that are selling their wares on social media that will necessarily have the same echo effect, let's say 20 years from now, where someone comes across it and thinks we just need to cancel that from social media curation, for mostly because people are engaged with the material now. Often I think where someone's pulling down the statue, it's because current thinking never got a chance to actually talk to the artist, the creator, or the person. So there's a lot more discussion going on right now with individuals that for whatever reason might be perceived as edu heroes that I think might inoculate us from actually bringing them to mind 15 years from now and saying, you know, there's a problem with this person. There's a little bit, it's funny, maybe just a little bit more humanity in the conversation. Whether or not the individual is acknowledging it, they're probably being interacted with far more than some dude, you know, hundreds of years ago that made a bronze sculpture of John A. McDonald. But there is a connection here to me about how we sort of lift up edu celebrity and why we're doing it, like why we're willing to sort of appreciate them for one note and potentially ignore everything else that they are. It's got to be tiring. I went to an e-conference this past summer, and the individual that had it going was for some of the on-ramp to the sessions, was playing music and dancing in their living room. And I just thought to myself, like, this, how has this become the thing that's the on-ramp to an area of content and a brand that you're representing that probably doesn't need you dancing around like that in your living room? Like, there was a weird dissonance to it to me that I thought, you know what? It's not for me. You know, I stayed for a little bit and I left the conference. Other people stayed, other people really enjoyed it. I could tell there was camaraderie and community there, but I thought to myself, they're applauding the dancing and the gymnastics of the on-ramp, that it doesn't match up to what the product is connecting with for me. And if I accepted that as the entry point, as the sort of like the entry ticket, then I felt like everything else had to be as sort of silly and energized. And for me, that would just be a distraction. So I left. It was a free conference, but I left. But that's kind of the example. Like, actually, I guess the word kind of is sad. I thought, you know, to have that kind of element, like how that was packaged, to have to be that person along with some smart tools that they've also released and, you know, some literature that they've also released, to also be kind of like that level of hype machine. I thought, you know, it disconnected me. I felt a disconnect.
It's funny that, I'm sorry, but you started off with EduCelebs being somewhat accessible, and I have to disagree just because I've attempted to communicate with a couple of them that have never responded to me.
Oh, and I love that. Sorry. I mean accessible, that there's the opportunity there in a way that, you know, in the way that we have become more aware of who, and I keep using the John A. McDonald, but as we become more aware of the individual, we're doing it many years after the fact. So accessibility is still, whether or not you have direct accessibility, you're in the moment when the stuff's being created. Whether or not you can personally connect with them, well, I get it. That doesn't always happen.
Yeah, so, and I think I knew where you were going with accessibility. But even where the way you were taking it, it's still funny that they're pretending or playing up that even for them, there are certain people that they're just not going to communicate with, you know, and they're not anything really special. They just maybe think they're really special, or there are people who treat them really special.
The latter. So it's the market. It's the market that
they're going to pick and choose who they're going to communicate with. So it's just the whole thing's interesting to me.
That's the fan club. That's the whole other, the fan base. I mean, on one hand, if you're going to have heroes, then you also have the fan base, right? You have that idea of the individuals that, that they're looking, they rep the product, they rep the brand. They're the ones that sort of push it forward. That's who the heroes know they have to talk to. So if we go back to the edgy celebs, they are giving advance currency of some sort, whether it's, you know, face-to-face time talking to them or something just beyond the Patreon wall or some sort of sense of extra content or a sticker or a t-shirt. That's the stuff that sort of lights up the fan people. So the fact that someone wouldn't talk to you is because you either haven't become a fan or faked it enough to become like a sneaky spy fan just in order to get stuff, right? And that becomes, you know, on one hand, for me, I guess that would be an ethical dilemma. And on one hand, like, do I kind of pretend to be someone in order to kind of gain access so I can have real conversations? I guess I could do that. But I've had the experience of trying to do that with an individual. And then they said I was, well, you know, what did they say? They said I was not being kind. No. You remember a couple years back?
I do remember.
What was the word? The wording was I wasn't being...
had to do with just you weren't kind. You were difficult.
That's the thing. Yeah, I was difficult. So I was blocked. So that can happen.
It can happen. It's very interesting too, because now I'm biased because I kind of know you a little bit better than that person. Mm-hmm. And I know you to be, from my experiences with you, are that you're an authentic individual who's open to being a critical thinker as well. So you were simply, I recall at one point, you were asking questions to gather information. Mm-hmm. You were trying to understand better what was going on. And so you went right to the source. And it was, the responses you were getting were curt and very like very defensive. And you, I recall you saying something about, hey, I'm not trying to poke here. I generally have these questions. And you may take them the wrong way because they do sound critical at first, but...
Well, I don't think the fans are asking those questions.
No, the fans are not asking anything, but the fact that you were asking to gain an understanding, to gain some knowledge, and quite frankly, you were asking to see if the product on the other end held its weight, mm-hmm. which is not... I don't think it's such a strong request. I don't think it's a negative thing. It's, you have to be ready for those things. If you're going to stand by your product or your theory or your idea, and every time somebody pushes back on it, you run away. Like, I guess there's some of us who are just not interested in that. So I don't support this particular edgy celeb because I feel it's very inauthentic. And I've seen the playbook over the same play over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. It's a limited playbook and it's the same canned responses all the time. And you and I have talked about this. I guess if you're buying the book or you're buying the product, it's because there's something about it that really, it speaks to you. And then because you've invested in it, you're not going to talk down about it because you were one of the people who invested in it. I'm coming from a place, and I think you're coming from a place, where we're looking for authentic interaction and like an academic honesty type of thing. I mean, it's the wrong words I'm using, but...
I think it's not rigor. I think the word is kind of like a rigor to it, where you're willing to kind of tug on the topic a little bit. You're willing to kind of have it like you can feel it being pulled from your hands, and you have to decide whether or not holding on to it is, you know, like, what is it that's making you hold on to that? I think that's how you sort of keep the issue between you in a conversation. You do feel the pull of the other person bringing up good points of like contradictory points, and then some of support, and you get this back and forth. Ultimately, you get to leave with your ideas, but you should also be leaving with some of their ideas too. So it's almost like you each get a bit of the rope as you walk away.
You know what's interesting? This makes me think of the few times that I've been in a position to present information to people, or the times where people will message me or call upon me to assist them with something that has to do with technology integration and pedagogy, that connection. You should see what they do when I tell them, like when I say I don't know, or I give them the positives and the negatives of a particular tool. They just look at me weird, like almost like, how dare I speak against something that they believe that I should be speaking for. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. And most of the time my response is, I don't know. And then it's like, it's really cool, because for the people who hold on and stick by me, there's some really cool learning that happens, because together then we investigate their question. And because I have some skills that they may not have yet, I'm able to get to an answer faster than they can. Mm-hmm. Then we can talk about that answer and whether whatever it is that they're looking at is going to meet their needs. So it's kind of cool that way. That's fun for me to say, oh, I don't know, I've never done it like that, but let's figure it out, or let's take a look and see what happens here. They look at you funny, almost like they can't believe that somebody would say they don't know, or someone would speak against something that they think that you're like a true fan of. It's always been boggling to me. And I know people who will pretend they know everything all the time when they're asked. And that's got to do, I guess, with their own stuff and not wanting to lose this like control that they think they have over a position or a topic. They just don't want to let it go. Mm-hmm. Those people now at this point in my career make me laugh. Like, those are the people who take ownership of particular ideas or experiences, and they hold it because that's all they feel that they have. So if you try to step on their toes, they are going to come at you hard to protect their power over something. I'll give you an example, and I won't get too specific because people listening might know, but a teacher at my school came to me and asked me about using a particular resource in their classroom. And they said, do you have a problem with me using this resource? I said, I don't have a problem with you using this resource, but are you going to go and ask every single primary teacher if you can use this resource? Because some will find out you're using it without having spoken to them first, and there will be drama, because they have ownership, or at least they have perceived ownership of this particular resource. Now, the good thing about me, I would say, is that I'm going to do what I want. And I think people know that. And I say that, and it sounds kind of militant here when I'm talking to you. It doesn't come out that way at work, unless you push me too far. But I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and I'm going to use what I'm going to use. If it's yours, I'm not going to use it without talking to you. But if it's not yours, if it's a general resource for many to use and I need it, then I'm going to use it. And if you have it, then I'm going to ask you for it, because it's for all of us to use. People already generally have an idea that that's how I'm going to operate, and I make no mistakes, which is part of my problem, right? Because part of my problem is that when I go to work, I think I'm friendly with my colleagues, but they're not all my friends. So I'm not going to play it that way. I'm not going to use that angle. And then if they see something in me they don't like, then that's okay. They don't like it. Not a problem. I got to keep living my life. You live yours. So there's this like line for me. And I don't think this person understands that there is this line because of their inexperience in this line of work, or in any line of work, really. It's these things that are just like, Some people just have to have that. And it's dangerous when you have an edu celeb who is basically holding on to a concept. And every time somebody pushes back on the concept, they get their knickers in a knot. And then this happens over and over and over again. And now they don't want to engage with anybody because their back's up all the time. And I've seen this in a couple of different edu celebs. I've seen this in an edu celeb where a mutual Twitter connection had a question, and I referred this question to this edu celeb who then ended up losing it in the conversation because their back was up, because their back has been up 8,000 times in conversations like this. And I know the person that was asking the question, and he wasn't being difficult. He just needed to know. So I thought I was showing respect to the edu celeb by saying, hey, I know this is your wheelhouse. This person's got a valid question. And it ended up being me looking at the other guy, looking at the edu celeb, like, what just happened there? Why did that person go off? Like, they exploded. And it's almost like they're waiting to explode every day. Or I've been asked this question many times before. You're just trying to pick a fight. No, he's not. He has a valid question. And if you look at his, if you look at his Twitter portfolio, whatever you want to call it, his history, you'll see that he does this a lot to gain information so that he can speak to whatever the topic is. And you just went off half-cocked. And anybody who looks at your Twitter history will see that that's what you do. Yeah. I just thought it might be different this time. Oh, well. We've not had one viewer today so far, and I think it's because it's Halloween. Yep. People are prepping. People are sanitizing their candy and and creating contraptions to drop their candy. That will what are those machines called?
Candy trap.
A candy trap, but what are those machines called?
Rube Goldberg. Yeah.
Devices to get candy to kids. Like,
plunk.
Yeah. Hilarious. Can I tell you what we're doing today?
Please do.
So we're not going trick-or-treating.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
We're not going trick-or-treating. And we're not handing out candy.
Same here.
So, okay. But my neighborhood.
So your lead is what you're not doing.
We're not trick-or-treating.
Let me tell you what we're going to not do. Okay, go.
But the neighborhood I live in is doing like, they have like a route, and there are like six houses in the route. Mm-hmm. And when you come to one of those six houses, they have bagged candy, and they will be dropping it down some type of contraption to get to you.
Okay.
So they're trying to make it a COVID Halloween where you're not going door to door. You're going to certain places where they've taken certain precautions and measures to ensure it's safe, whatever.
Yep.
So we said to my youngest, this is what you're going to do. If you want candy, this is what we're willing to do. And he's bummed out. He's bummed out.
Rightfully so.
This is what we are doing.
Here we go.
I am getting wings. We're having wings tonight and we're watching college football. And that is the way to keep him happy. Well, and hey, to keep me happy. And
I heard that part.
Yeah, we're both going to be happy that we're not outside in the cold going from door to door because we're going to be home eating chicken wings and watching football. And what's really funny is when I told my son, so he was pretty bothered. I said, dude, why don't we just get wings and watch football? He's like, really? I'm like, yeah, really. Let's just do that. I mean, we can't go out. We're not handing out candy. Let's do something that we can enjoy. He's like, okay. So he goes to tell my wife. He's like, Mom, Dad said we're going to get wings. And so he tells her the whole story. And she's like, well, as long as you get the wings I like, I'm happy to participate. So there's check. The mom agrees to this in a, you know, make sure I get some of the wings that I like. And then we tell my oldest son and same thing. He's like, well, like, so everybody's on board for the COVID Halloween chicken wing and college football night. So that's what we are doing.
I feel like my parents were ahead of the the wave when I can't tell you how many Halloweens they would just take us out for dinner.
Really? That was their way of dealing with it, eh?
Yeah, I don't know how it started. It's sort of, they started doing that before my sister and I kind of lost interest in Halloween. I think we, you know what I mean? I think they're in that tipping point, but I can remember a few Halloweens where it's just like, well, let's go out for dinner. Let's just go for dinner. So.
I have to tell you that I had Pepe's yesterday for lunch.
Oh, Pepe's. What'd you have?
I had a pizza. So my buddy Mike and I, every Friday, we like to have something a little special for lunch.
Yep.
And we were going back and forth for like 2 days. We couldn't decide. And he just says, you know what? What about a Munchies sub from Pepe's? And I said, you know what? I'm not feeling the sub, but I can go for a small pizza. Mm-hmm. He's like, okay. So he, on his planning time, right before lunch, he called in and he ordered the food. And then at lunch, we went and we got it. We came back, and little did I know that he had spoken to the principal, and the principal ordered a sub as well. So the three of us got to sit and chat and eat Pepe's on a Friday afternoon.
That's a good Friday.
You know what? It was a moment, actually. I told my buddy Mike this. I didn't tell Paul, my principal, but I will. It was a moment that is now solidified in my brain as one of the cool things I've done at work. You know how over the years you gather experiences. Yep. And so when you retire, you're like, remember this time, remember that time. It is now one of those times where we're sitting in the principal's office and we are having a great time laughing, joking, talking about all kinds of stuff and eating good food. So I thought I'd share that. It's like, it literally is a highlight these days during these COVID times. And don't worry, everybody, we were not sitting side by side. We were distanced and we took the mask off so we could eat, because God forbid, you know, I got to get that food in me somehow. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like, I'm still not ready to talk to you about work. I got nothing to say about work.
No, and that's our podcast, our rules. So whatever.
Imagine if one of us just came up with new rules without talking to the other person.
Well, I'm do it. That's another experience. That's another experience. I mean, I'm okay with that. Because part of it, no matter how it plays out, is that the other person has to play into the new rule. The more interesting point is if one becomes resistant. So all of a sudden, you know, you roll into next week and you're like, okay, I've decided every third Saturday we're wearing purple clothing. I'm like, well, okay. And then we just start talking, right? So we can throw whatever we want in there, but mix it up. I'm open to the experience. However you wanna adjust. 4 years in invested in this episode, and if there's one thing I've learned, I'm just going to leave it a mystery.
You know what I thought? I thought, we're having a tech issue.
I know. I saw the look on your face.
I'm like, oh, for real? We're having a tech issue?
Back in Clank Studios, baby. I've learned lots of stuff. But as far as being an experience and saying yes and just playing with it, sure. Let's do it.
Rest in peace, Clank. What did you draw? Oh, it's a mask. A broken mask? Why is it broken? Because Halloween is broken this year. Right? Am I right?
I leave it to the viewers.
You're doing this too much these days. This artsy fartsy, I'm going to leave it to people's to decide what they think. I don't like this, Chris.
Should I cut holes in it so I can actually have it as a mask?
If you like. It's how's yours. You drew
how's
it.
How's it look?
It looks great.
All right.
It looks great.
All right.
So I guess that's it, eh? Episode. Yeah. Oh, this was season 4, episode 8. There was no episode 8 last week because we couldn't make it happen.
That's okay. That's how life works. And then you bounce, and then you bounce back, and then you bounce in a different direction. So I'm all cool with that. I'm all cool with that, man. I'm happy. We actually, you know what? If the universe was saying we had to choose between the two, I like that we did the Halloween episode. I liked landing on this. This was cool.
I wish it was more Halloween-y, but I mean, we had stuff. We wore our We wore our stuff.
We did. We wore our stuff. We talked about heroes. That's all, like, dressing up, masks. Like, we... Let's not forget Shark. We're here punching the shark, right? Oh.
Can I say one more thing before we go?
Of course.
Okay. I can't tell you... I love this power that I have, that I can tell you stories without telling you who the people are involved, because I want to protect them. I love it. Okay, yep. So so I had a conversation this week with an educator who is retired from education but has a new job.
Okay.
And I was communicating with this individual, and we were talking about the politics of education these days in Ontario. Okay. And I said to this person, I said it, and I didn't mean it in a rude way, but I was like, you're retired now, so you could probably say what you think. And the response was, you know what, I can't. And I said, why not? And they said, well, because of the new job I have, if I start talking about politics and about the system and how the education system works and the issues with the system, I will probably find myself unemployed and nobody will want to employ me, because I would be kind of like a magnet for those conversations from this point forward. And it was funny because it was one of these conversations where it was like, oh, but you're retired now, so you can do whatever you want. She's like, I can't really do what I want, because, well, I could, because I don't work for a school board, but if I want to be employed by other people in education, I want to keep doing the good work that I've been doing for many years, I can't just go off and start revealing the secret sauce, you know, or
the Pandora's box,
the tricks behind the magic. Like, I can't let the secrets out.
The truth is out there. The
truth is out there, but you know, are people going to hear about the truth? Probably not, because there's a lot at stake for people who do speak the truth. And that's not to say that everything about our profession, like, there's not a lot of stuff, but to be in the know and to understand the system, you can see the holes in the system, right? You can see where the inequities lie and why they're there, right?
Yeah. Plus, there is a funny little bit of risk in coming out after the fact. So you can be the person that's telling the truth, and sort of opening up whatever conversations that are being kind of codified or being, you know, clandestine, whatever individuals outside of EDU think is happening inside EDU, or even some factions inside EDU where they think like stuff isn't being exactly honest. But there's also very much now, you know, by coming out and sort of saying, yes, this was happening, this is happening, but I'm working towards, you know, difference now, being called out on that because you knew the whole time. You know what I mean? So you're the truth teller that ends up getting squashed too, because you were there. You were in the room when that thing was said. And that was 5 years ago. And now when you're retired and, you know, potentially untouchable, you're going to come out and be that superhero. Right? Why'd you wait so long? You know, you could have made a real difference in other people's lives as opposed to just protecting your own livelihood. So I've seen that happen and play out too.
Well, Chris, it's always a pleasure. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Oh,
as soon as we decide we're leaving, we have a viewer.
Hello, viewer.
Can you believe that? Hello, viewer. We're so sorry, but we're shutting things down for season 4, episode 8.
I gotta go rake leaves and get my truck. Here's the thing. There you go. Taking off the mask. I'm no hero. I'm going to go be a dad now. I'm going to go have a little bit of breakfast. Yeah, there you go.
For our number one viewer, our only viewer, I'm going to say no.
Fist bump. No, we'll say no. It's the Hulk fist bump.
That's it for Decoded tonight.
Fantastic. Have a good day, man. I look forward to chatting with you soon.
Peace.